new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
I'm your host, Jeff Saffer, here with you for another great afternoon of sports talk and everything in between. And we got another great week of March Madness to go over with you. That was the call from CBS Sports. We played there in the opening of Wisconsin and Xavier. Of course, that crazy buzzer beater from the corner. I could hear my aunts and uncles from Wisconsin cheering all the way from here for the Badgers. Oh yeah. Of course, got to throw in a little shout out to all my friends and family listening from the great state of Wisconsin. And yes, it is true. They do actually talk like that. Yes, it's not just Fargo or some other show that's depicted Midwest accents. It's a thing. It's real. And if you're from the Midwest, you're doing yourself a disservice by not addressing that fact that does in fact happen. And we got a great show lined up for you today. We got some March Madness talk to talk about that wild tournament. That buzzer beater by Koning there was one of the few crazy moments of the tournament from this past weekend. We'll kind of go through some of those with you, and we'll look ahead to the Sweet 16 coming up on Thursday and Friday. And by the week's end, we will have, or I should say, yes, by this week's end, we will know who the Final Four will be as we head to Houston for the Final Four next weekend. And we'll also have a lot more talk to you in sport world. We'll talk some NFL, the NFL owners meetings taking place this week at Boca Raton in Florida. And also we got some NBA news, the Dubs and the Clippers going at it again tonight. And LeBron James, that is, made an interesting comment about maybe taking a pay cut to make something possible. So we'll go into that. And we'll also have our last segment of the show. We'll talk about our brewery slash bar of the week and our bet pick of the week, as we normally feature those two things on our show every week. And this week for the bar brewery of the week, I'm saying bar slash breweries because I'm taking a little bit of a different approach with it this week. We've done a lot of just breweries as on the show so far, and yes, we will mainly focus on the beer, but I figured why not throw in good watering holes in there as well for around this area. So for today, I'm going to throw in one of my favorite local bar slash restaurants in for my bar brewery of the week. And we'll also go over one of my favorites for bets this week. And speaking of that, I'm undefeated. I'm 5-0 on every bet that I have made on this show has come to fruition. You can go down the list. I should say this is show number 5, so I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here saying 5-0. I should say 4-0, but who's counting, right? Anyway, so let's get her going, huh? You got the NCAA March Madness happening this week, and last week we had the opening games last Thursday and Friday, and man, they did not disappoint. That is for sure. We saw some crazy upsets. I have to be honest, I had Michigan State winning the whole thing in both of the pools I'm a part of this year. I'm a part of two, and with some local friends of mine from my hometown of Hillsburg, about 70 miles, or less than that, but 50, 60 miles north of here. And I'm also in a pool with some of my buddies from the University of Oregon. As many of you know, I was a student at the University of Oregon for 3 years, and I still bleed green and yellow. So anyway, I was in two different pools there with those different groups of people and picked Michigan State in both of those. And as many of you know, that did not go so hot in the first round for them, as they dropped off really a tough one to Middle Tennessee State, the 15 seed. Just a shocking loss. And the thing that really I found most shocking about it is that I mentioned on the show about Michigan State and saw as one of their strengths was that their depth and also their veteran leadership on the team. You just didn't expect a team with Denzel Valentine and Nate Costello and, you know, all, you know, and Tom Izzo, their coach, he's been to, you know, almost as many tournaments as anybody in college basketball. You know, throw him in there with Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Bill Self. Tom Izzo is right there. And Mark Few is another coach you have to throw in there. But, you know, he's right there. And to me, there's no excuse for what happened on the court, and it showed when Middle Tennessee played against Syracuse in their next game. They got absolutely destroyed in that game on Sunday against the Cuse, in which the Cuse went ahead to the Sweet 16. We'll get to them a little bit later, but it just showed how much that Michigan State left on the table with that loss, and you saw it. You know, you could tell in the first half that Michigan State just came out flat, that they let Middle Tennessee jump all over him. It was 17-2 right out of the gate. But Michigan State was able to crawl back into that game. But so many times you thought, you know, they got to within three or they got to within one. And you thought, oh, here we go. This is when Michigan State puts the pedal down and they pull away. But that never happened. And Michigan State ended up losing the game, and they had so many opportunities, especially in the last 2 minutes, where they're down by two or three points, and they had good looks to either tie or take a lead in the game. And when you do that in a game against an underdog, that puts so much of the heat back on the underdog just to tie the game. You know, it forces them to have to do something, them meaning Middle Tennessee. And Middle Tennessee just kind of was allowed to sit on that lead a little bit. And, you know, kudos to them that they are able to hit some free throws down the stretch. But Middle Tennessee, their run was ended in the very next round, and they ended up losing by 25 to Syracuse and Jim Boeheim. So I guess, as I've said multiple times from Ricky Bobby's father, if you ain't first, you're last. So that's how I would say it for both of those teams, Middle Tennessee and Michigan State. But even with that and all of the crazy upsets and buzzer beaters and everything else that we saw, I mean, Northern Iowa's half-court shot to win their game against Texas in the first round, the tip-in by Iowa in their first-round game, the tip-in by Providence over USC. I mean, the list goes on and on of all the crazy moments that we saw. But the one thing that you look at with the tournament in the field right now is that even with all the craziness that has occurred, the dust has seemingly cleared, and the true powerhouse programs are still, for the most part, all intact. You look at all the four number one seeds, everybody's still there. North Carolina, we got the Ducks of Oregon, University of Oregon, University of Virginia. The gang's all there. And Kansas, I kind of blanked on the last one there for a second. But the gang's all there in terms of number ones. And the only mid-major team that's left in the 16-team field is Gonzaga. And Gonzaga, even though they were kind of on the bubble a little bit to make it into the tournament, I wouldn't consider Gonzaga really a mid-major. Yes, they play in the West Coast Conference, I understand, but Gonzaga has been a mainstay in the NCAA tournament, and I think if you don't think Gonzaga is a major college basketball power, then you're delusional. I'm sorry. They've been to the tournament time and time again. Mark Few is considered one of the best coaches in basketball, and I would say in college basketball, and he's had multiple opportunities to go elsewhere, but he chooses not to because he can recruit good players to Gonzaga, and Gonzaga is in the tournament seemingly every season. So he's sitting on a nice salary. In Spokane, I've been there a couple times. It's a nice town. Why would he leave? And, I give credit to Gonzaga with, kind of being a team that's kind of a crossover. And they're not alone in college basketball. I see Wichita State being in that same category or is trying to get towards that same category. Virginia Commonwealth is a number school that comes to mind, or Marquette. Even Marquette, who plays in a big conference, I understand, but they aren't, a huge school. And definitely they aren't even the biggest school in the city of Milwaukee, just to give you an idea. Actually, the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee is a bigger school than Marquette in terms of enrollment there at the school. So it's kind of an interesting thing to call Gonzaga mid-major, and the point of that is that I would really make the argument that there really isn't a mid-major left in this tournament. Calling Gonzaga mid-major is kind of a stretch, and you look at the matchups, and this is going to be fun. It's a lot of heavyweight battles, starting on Thursday. You got A&M in Oklahoma, you got Kansas in action, you got Oregon and Duke. I think that looks like the most fun matchup of the night. I think that should be fun. You got Maryland facing up against Kansas, and it's going to be a really fun couple of games. And looking at some of the games on Friday, you got Notre Dame, you have UNC versus UNC playing? Indiana. There we go. They're playing Indiana. You got Virginia against Iowa State. So you have all these teams. You got the lower seeds playing the higher seeds. You got the number ones playing the fours. And you look at all of the four seeds against these number ones. And I think all four of these number one seeds are capable of beating, or the other way around, all the four seeds are capable of beating the number one seeds. You look at Duke and their experience facing a tough Oregon team who is kind of the problem I see with Duke and, Oregon is that Oregon is just such a matchup nightmare. And I think the Ducks, what they will really try to focus to do is to try to push the tempo. You've seen two teams really try to force in their first two games, try to force the Ducks into kind of a half-court set. Holy Cross, that didn't really go so hot for them. The Ducks blew them out. But then St. Joe's, also, they had a kind of more half-court approach tried to force the Ducks to stay in a half-court game and not let them get out and run. And it worked. The St. Joe's was able to really limit the Ducks in that and scored way more points than the Ducks did off of turnovers. So that really shows you that St. Joe's was able to keep the Ducks in a half-court set, but even that wasn't enough. Dylan Brooks still lit St. Joe's up, and you know, their ability just to make their own shots can be enough for this team. As you look at so many guys on this squad can just beat you off the dribble and can get above the rim, and they can shoot the three, and they just do so many things well offensively. But really the underrated part of their team is their team defense and their speed and athleticism, and that really kept them in the game against St. Joe's at the end of the game the other night in Spokane. And the other thing to look at is this game will be played in Los Angeles in the West Region, which that is going to be Ducks, you know, that's going to be Matthew Knight Arena South down there. There's going to be a ton of Duck fans at that game. Duck fans are very accustomed to traveling to Southern California, whether it be when the Ducks play against a SoCal team like UCLA or USC, or also bowl games. The Ducks have played in the Rose Bowl a couple times over the last 5 years, so it's not a trip that Ducks fans and the players are really not used to making. So that I see as a huge advantage for the Ducks as well. And looking at some of the other matchups, I see a similar matchup with Iowa State and Virginia, even though Virginia can also really shoot the rock themselves. Maryland, I mean, they have a ton of talent. You might see three or four players from that squad on the in the NBA in a year or two down the line, and they can definitely stand up to Kansas. They're ranked in the top five preseason, Maryland was, and they definitely kind of hit a rut in the middle of the season, lost a few games, you know, most notably lost that kind of crazy one to University of Minnesota kind of in around February. That was a huge upset, and nobody really saw that one coming. So they kind of hit a rough spot, but a team with that much talent is definitely always dangerous. And looking at Notre Dame facing Syracuse, that's a very interesting matchup there. We got, and really probably the most interesting matchup of them all, in my book, is Indiana and North Carolina. And looking at those two teams, I mean, two powerhouse conferences, two powerhouse programs, just kind of an old school battle, and you know, lots of veterans on both teams. Yogi Ferrell leading Indiana and Bryce Johnson leading the Tar Heels, and that should be a really fun game. It's in a neutral site. It's played in Philadelphia, so I bet we'll have a lot of fans from both teams at the game. I think that should be the most fun game of the weekend. And man, this should be a really fun Sweet 16. And be interested to see who will make it out of this mess and make it all the way to the Final Four. And that's really the funnest part, I think, about this Sweet 16, is that it is wide open. You know, you could make an argument for every one, almost, of these 16 teams making it through to the Final Four. And, or at least a huge number of these teams, you could make an argument for that. And it's not cut and dry. It's not like last year where we had these powerhouse teams that were just dominating everyone, like Wisconsin with Frank the Tank, Frank Kaminsky, and Kentucky with Karl Anthony Towns. You know, this isn't the same monster this year, and there's a lot of games to be played and a lot of talented spread out through a lot of different teams. So get ready, folks. Buckle up and, you know, don't leave the couch. You know, don't go anywhere, because you never know when you might miss something awesome. So, all right, we're going to take our first break of the night. You've been listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. When we come back, we're going to get into some NFL talk and also talk some NBA. The Dubs in action tonight, and we're going to see what King James has to say. He's always got a mic in front of his face, it seems like, even though he claims he disfollowed the Cavs on Twitter, so he didn't want to bring too much attention to himself, whatever. And we'll see what he had to say about him possibly taking a pay cut. So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Meet Dennis. He just had a really bad day and is about to go over the edge with rage.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds!
This aggressive behavior has become all too common. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the U.S. during 1 year. So don't be like Dennis. Join the fight against domestic violence today.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Mike Wilmer.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just went over some March Madness talk and kind of previewed a little bit of some of the matchups that are coming up this weekend. It's going to be really fun. I mean, it's one of those events that really, I feel like, especially this year, you just kind of have to sit back and really just let it unfold. There's so many teams that are in it and so much talent around college basketball right now, and it's so spread out, and it's just one of those. It'll be one of those it'll be really fun to be the Monday morning quarterback after everything settles and we have a Final Four at the end of everything at the end of this week. So to keep things moving along here, we're gonna stay in the sports world, but we're gonna move on to the NFL, as the NFL had their annual owners meetings this week in Boca Raton, Florida, and they made a few changes to the rule book this week. A total of 9 rule changes were accepted by the NFL, either on a permanent or a 1-year trial basis, like how they tried out the PAT experiment last year, where they moved it back to the 15-yard line, and they actually put that in to be a permanent rule, so that is not going to go anywhere. And, you know, I'm all for that. I think it's cool. I was a little bit skeptical at first, and my reaction at first when I heard that was, why? You know, why would you change the play? But, you know, it made the play a little bit more exciting, and, you know, and just made people think, you know, there's, you know, you can now lose a game because of a PAT. And that's something that's a lot more of a reality now than it was in the past. But some of the changes that they made this year, some of the most noteworthy ones, we'll go over with you. Probably the biggest one that I've seen was that when a kicker kicks a touchback, you know, if a player either kneels in the end zone with the football, or the kicker, you know, just blasts it through the back of the end zone for a touchback. Instead of the ball coming out to the 20, the ball will now come out to the 25. And, you know, 5 yards doesn't sound like that much, but the NFL has been very eminent about player safety over the last couple of years, and that's exactly what this move's about right here. It's about trying to keep the players safe and trying to eliminate more collisions on a kickoff type of play, because when you see it, you know, the ball comes to the 20 after a touchback. A player, you know, bringing it out from 8 yards deep really doesn't have all that much to lose. You know, it's like, you know, so what if he doesn't make it, you know, so what if he doesn't get past the 20, you know, it's might as well give her a shot, you know. But now the 25, I feel like returners will have much more of a reason to stay in the end zone, so they don't give up field position. So if they field a kick that's 8 yards deep, it would be much more of a risk for the returner in terms of field position to bring that ball out. And it works more to eliminate that play altogether from the NFL, that kickoff, because that has been talked about and kind of proven as the most dangerous quote-unquote play in football is the kickoff. And it does make sense. You know, you got guys running at full tilt, you know, at each other. It's almost like a, you know, head-on collision sometimes. And not even that, you know, we've seen multiple guys, you know, sustain terrible injuries, you know, in their legs, knees, you know, in that part from kickoffs. You know, thinking about the New York Jets. The Jets lost multiple backs because of kick returns. Zach Stacy comes to mind. Zach Stacy completely destroyed his leg on a kick return and missed the whole rest of the year. So, you know, I understand the safety thing, and I think it's definitely a good thing. And, you know, especially if it doesn't affect the quality of the game of football and change the image of the game, and I think it's great. You know, keep these guys safe so they're not struggling with CTE and everything else that's been surrounding around the NFL. And another change they'd make, this one's kind of on the same grounds, is they're eliminating the chop block entirely from the NFL. The chop block was kind of a strange rule, was that if a blocker, say a lineman, was engaged, so for this sake, let's say that a lineman was engaged with J.J. Watt, let's say that Russell Okung and J.J. Watt were up against each other. You know, Okung blocking and Watt rushing. That means that the lineman is engaged. And if somebody, a defender, comes in underneath, you know, below the knees on a blocker, that was when it was considered a chop block. But, you know, that rule kind of had some wiggle room in it if a lineman wasn't engaged with, you know, and it kind of goes both ways as well. You know, if an offensive player couldn't chop block a defensive player if a defensive player was engaged with an offensive lineman. So it would go the other way for J.J. Watt as well. But they are completely eliminating the rule. So if you chop block someone in any way, shape, or form, there's going to be a personal foul penalty. And I completely agree with that. I think that's a great move. And you saw reaction from the NFL. They agreed as well, kind of in a way of saying, like, well, thank God, it's about time somebody made this rule change. And, you know, kind of seems like kind of an obvious one. I mean, the first thing you think when you go down, you know, below the bell is you're thinking about your knees and your ankles and, you know, blown ACLs, broken ankles, broken femurs, all those terrible things that can happen when you go low on someone. And so I definitely think that's a good change. And kind of going to a different look at it rule, kind of getting away from the player safety rules now. I'll mention one more player safety rule. They also changed the horse collar rule, where kind of the horse collar is moved down, so to speak. So the horse collar is now, you know, kind of the name, you know, the plate on the back of a player's jersey where it says their name down or up, sorry, is that is what is now considered a horse collar. And going on to a kind of discipline rule, the NFL has now put in place a similar rule to a little bit to what the NCAA has with personal fouls and having this two-strike ejection policy, so to speak, with specific personal foul penalties, meaning that if you receive a personal foul of a similar type twice in one game, then you are automatically ejected from the game, no questions asked. It's similar to the NCAA with personal fouls and also the targeting penalty they have, where if a player is called for targeting, then they are officially disqualified from the game. And this one, I think, is a little bit more up for interpretation and kind of a wait-and-see basis, at least for me. And I think that's the reason why it's smart that they're putting it on a one-year let's-wait-and-see basis, because this, to me, could get a little bit dicey. And I really don't want to see players get thrown out of games because they lost their head for 1 second. I mean, I'm thinking similarly to the game in the NFL at the end of last year between the Giants and Carolina. You had Odell Beckham and Josh Norman kind of going at each other a couple times in quick succession. Things got out of control. The refs lost control of the game in that moment. And with the rules the NFL is putting in place, they could throw out both of those guys for that whole skirmish. And I don't really think that's right, to be honest with you. It's football, and certain things happen in football. And I understand that some things are unforgivable, like Vontaze Burfict's hit on Antonio Brown in the playoffs. That was crap. I understand that. And, you know, if a guy pulls something like that twice, yeah, throw his butt out of the game. That's fine. But the NFL has to find, you know, kind of a good way to do this, similarly to how the NBA has done it with flagrant fouls. That's exactly the parallel I think the NFL should try to draw, that what they have with the NBA. Make a flagrant one, a flagrant two, and, you know, just classify these penalties, because, you know, it's not just for the safety and, you know, integrity of the game that is at interest here. It's you know, it's keeping the great players in the game and, you know, not having them out there, you know, walking around like they're on eggshells, you know? Let these guys play. Let them do what they have been trained to do all their lives, and that's play football. And it's going to be interesting to see how the officials handle all this, and we'll have to see where the NFL decides to go with this. And it should be, you know, I think it should be a good experiment. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see, but I also don't want it to be something that becomes a problem down the road. Not a whole lot of free agency news going on this week. We've kind of gone through the biggest and most crazy part of the free agency period. The NFL is after the owners' meeting. It's kind of, when you listen to guys like Bill Polian and that are on the air on SiriusXM NFL Radio or ESPN, who are former executives, hear him talk about the NFL year. After the owners' meetings, it's really kind of all hands on deck for the draft. And from now until the end of April, when the NFL draft is held, teams will be really focused in on the draft. But the one bit of free agency news, or one possible bit of free agency news that came out, was about Colin Kaepernick and how the 49ers, at least for now, are not going to be shopping Colin Kaepernick. And he's come out and said that he wants to go play for the Cleveland Browns, and Hugh Jackson play for the quote-unquote quarterback guru Hugh Jackson, who's kind of groomed a few QBs now over the last couple of years, most notably Andy Dalton in Cincinnati, and he's now the head man over in Cleveland. And, you know, there's been this, you know, kind of weird game with Kaepernick and the organization. We're not sure what the relationship will be or what it is with new head coach Chip Kelly and Kaepernick. I don't see why Kaepernick would be against having Chip as a coach. I mean, to me, Chip is the type of coach that would let Kaepernick fly, you know? You know, his offense is wide open. It's a quick pace. It's zone read. It's get the ball on the perimeter. It's run the football through the tackles. It's, you know, it's just, to me, his offense is really tailor-made for a quarterback like a Colin Kaepernick, guy who's so athletic on the field. You know, for the struggles that he's had the last year and a half or so, you cannot take that away from Colin Kaepernick. He is an absolutely athletic freak. I mean, he is big, he is fast, he's powerful, and, you know, and you look at his arm strength, he can throw the ball 70 yards. I mean, he can, you know, and he can be accurate at times. It's getting him in the system that works. He was in a system that worked with Jim Harbaugh. That offense was very successful, and, you know, I think all of the off-the-field crap that the 49ers have been dealing with for the last year and a half or so has really been their demise. And now with Chip Kelly coming in, a new regime, you know, a new start, they're kind of getting past those there's years with Jim Harbaugh kind of putting a new face of the 49ers coming in now. And I think this should be Kaepernick's shot. And I look at it and say, if I were Colin Kaepernick, I can make the $11+ million to play in San Francisco, a team that definitely looks to be on the come up, or to play for a team in Cleveland where, man, they don't look like they're going anywhere anytime soon, at least right now. And, you know, I don't care who the head coach is. I don't care if it's Vince Lombardi coming back from the grave. I don't think anybody could be able to lead this Cleveland team. I know there's a lot of time and there's a lot of things that can happen, and things have surprised me in the NFL before, but to me, staying in San Francisco and would be a much better move for Colin Kaepernick's career. And you look at it, you're probably going to be competing with a young quarterback no matter where you go, if you go to Cleveland or if you go to San Francisco. You know, the 49ers have been linked to Jared Goff as their possible draft pick in the top 10 overall in the NFL draft. And, you know, there's a high possibility that he'll have to compete for the job in San Francisco, but he'd probably have to compete for the job in Cleveland as well, as there's a very good chance they'll be drafting a quarterback in the first part of the draft. So that's an interesting thing to take a look at. We're going to make a segue now to some NBA talk, going to talk about the Bay Area team first, Golden State Warriors. They are in action tonight at Oracle Arena, 7:30, against the guys from Southern California. The LA Clippers are coming to town, and this matchup, I really feel like, is an interesting one in that the Warriors are coming in playing a little bit off from where they have been. We've seen Steph Curry's numbers drop a little bit over his last couple games, and part of that has been because of injury. I mean, Andre Iguodala hasn't been suiting up. Andrew Bogut hasn't been in the lineup, and that's absolutely part of it, you know. And we saw them, you know, not blow out a team in Minnesota. They beat the Timberwolves in their last game, but definitely didn't blow them out. The game was close throughout most of the way there. And now facing a Clipper team is very good. I mean, they've been in the top part of the Western Conference for most of this season. And it's hard to believe that these two teams just less than 2 years ago now were battling each other out in the first round of the NBA playoffs, and Warriors taking the Clippers to game 7, ended up losing Game 7 of that series, and just remember hearing reports about Stephen Clay crying in the locker room, saying, you know, that this, you know, this can never happen again, and just the sheer disappointment that those two guys had after losing that series. And of course, the next year they came out and won the NBA championship, and this season they've been running through the NBA, are on track to beat one of the greatest basketball teams of all time in the 95-96 Bulls in wins per season, of course chasing that 73 victories. And it's just kind of amazing to think about, wow, this is where this team is now, and they're facing that old nemesis again, the Clippers. These teams really have a lot of bad blood. You know, it's a lot of the same guys still on both teams, you know, same core. You still got CP3, DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford, J.J. Redick. You know, the gang's still all there. And same is true for the Warriors. And the fact that the Warriors are struggling just a hair coming into this game, I think really puts some added spice into it. You know, these could maybe put even more fire into the Clippers' belly. Because make no mistake, any team that plays the Warriors are bringing their best night in and night out. And you think the Clippers aren't going to show up for this game? Oh, they're ready for this baby. You know, they're coming into Oracle. They want to end that home win streak that the Dubs have going. You know, they want to put a hurt on the Warriors and really, you know, put them in trouble. Have them losers of two out of three. You know, they lost that game to the Spurs over the weekend, and, you know, make them think, oh, are they not as untouchable as everyone thought, and just get that little, you know, little speck of doubt into their best competition's head. And, you know, that's, you know, very important, you know, to get the Warriors out of this mindset that they've been in. Is that's part of it, is just the confidence the Warriors play with, that swagger, that, you know, they know that they're going to be able to make the plays down the stretch and win basketball games when they need to. And until somebody proves that the Warriors, you know, aren't that force in the NBA, you know, or they're not always that force, I should say, then, you know, it's going to be awful tough for somebody to turn around and do it in the playoffs. And I think this is a big, big moment for the Warriors in their season. If they can go out tonight and put, you know, another crazy game on the board, have Steph Curry raining threes, you know, and cruise against a really good Clippers team like they've done numerous times this season already, then I think all will be forgotten with the so-called Warriors' struggles. Now, let's be real here. To call the Warriors struggling right now is a little bit of a stretch. And, you know, it's just anything that shows any sign of weakness, the media is going to jump all over it. And they're going to try to make it a story. Or, oh, are the Warriors unraveling? And I understand that's part of it. And the Warriors can put all of that to bed tonight against the Clippers. And the other note that I thought I'd talk about from the NBA, which mentioned it about LeBron James, is that he made comments to the media today that he would be open to making, quote, taking a pay cut to play with his buddies. His buddies that he mentioned, CP3, Chris Paul, Melo, Carmelo Anthony, and Dwayne Wade, along with LeBron. And I just thought this was really interesting, and I'm not sure why LeBron would say something like this. And, you know, my first thought was, you know, what the heck does Cleveland think? Well, what does the Cleveland Cavaliers organization and the city of Cleveland have to think about this? Because, you know, I'm seeing it as a Cleveland Cavs fan. Like, I would be a little bit fed up with LeBron at this point. To me, I read this on a, you know, it kind of makes sense that LeBron, to me, is a lot like, you know, when you think about a member of a band who's bigger than the entire band, so to speak, or he is a, you know, there is no act, you know, no band without this guy. You know, you could think of an example. There's no police without Sting. There's a perfect example. The police, I'm sorry for the rest of the members of the police, but Sting is the heart and soul of the police, you know, with that bass and that great voice singing Roxanne. I mean, who doesn't love Sting? Anyway, it's like, but, you know, he's like almost like, you know, if this doesn't happen, then I'm going to leave. And he just seems like that kind of, I'm bigger than the whole, you know, city of Cleveland, and I'm going to, you know, put the whole city on my back. You know, he's like God. And I don't know if that's really what the image that I would want to portray as a star player. And I'm not sure how happy I would be as a Cleveland Cavs fan with LeBron saying all of this. And the other thing that came to mind is, what would other teams think about this? You know, would other teams be scared of this quote-unquote dream team with all these players? And my initial reaction, well, most teams won't be able to say this, but a select few would be, are they afraid or intimidated? Would be no. Like, I myself am convinced that teams that play true team basketball, and it's not just these superstar quote-unquote teams that have put themselves together, you know, and built themselves in the draft, you know, and built themselves on a winning formula and a great coaching, teams like San Antonio Spurs or now the Golden State Warriors, I still believe would beat that team with LeBron and Chris Paul and Melo. I don't care. I don't care about that. I mean, I understand that the star power would be huge on that team, but how are you going to get all of those guys to play together? I understand Chris Paul, great point guard. He'd be a great leader, but Carmelo Anthony, he's never taken second fiddle to anybody. LeBron's never taken second fiddle to anybody. And it's, to me, it would just be, you know, kind of a recipe for disaster. If LeBron can't make it work in Cleveland after 2 years, if they're still having issues with continuity, then how would this be any different? And to me, you know, I would, you know, if I was a betting man and you put those two teams, you know, a LeBron Cleveland team against the Golden State Warriors, this team, I would take the Warriors every time. And I'd be much more confident because not only do they have the talent, you know, looking with Clay and Steph with their two guards, but they have a nucleus around them that works, and they work together, and they drafted everyone. You know, you look at the Golden State Warriors starting five, or their normal starting five, four of the five players are all draft products on the Warriors, so it being Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green, Steph, and Clay. Those are all guys that the Warriors have drafted over the last 5 or 6 years, and you know, that's a big deal that these guys have that experience together, and they've come up in the NBA together, and they understand that to be successful as a team, you have to play together. And I'm not sure that team, that super team, so to speak, would be able to do that. And, you know, I guess it's all just speculation at this point. And you look at all those players' contracts, and they do seemingly all could have an opportunity to do it. And that's another thing, is seems odd saying this, is I've kind of grown up watching these guys play, but LeBron, Melo, Dwayne Wade, those guys are all getting old. You know, they're all approaching 30 plus. So, you know, they're, you know, it's not going to be all that long when these guys are going to start looking like Kobe Bryant, you know, on their farewell tour, you know. And I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, LeBron's going to all of a sudden lose the ability to dunk. I'm not saying that, but you know, that is a reality, that these guys are not young spring chickens anymore. And that's another reason why I feel like that this wouldn't work. So I guess LeBron, he can talk as much as he wants, and anytime he does talk, there will be somebody listening. So that's not going to change. And thought it was funny that, you know, LeBron says, to kind of continue that story, he said he stopped following the Cavaliers on Twitter was because he, like I had mentioned, that he didn't want to create more attention to the team. But at the same time, there are reports saying that he is thinking about getting his own Snapchat and start Snapchatting to fans while he's on the road. It's like, well, didn't you just say you didn't want to bring more attention to yourself? It's kind of contradicting yourself there, King James. So, all right, we're going to take our last break of the night. We're headed to the last segment of our show for this evening. We're going to do our brewery, or this week we're doing a bar of the week, a watering hole of the week. And we're also going to do my weekly bet of the week. So you're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm Jeff Safford here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We're going to play a couple of PSAs for you, and we will be right back after these quick messages. So stay tuned.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are 4 times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here with you on a beautiful Wednesday evening. Here we're just about 5 minutes from the 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock hour here in the beautiful campus of Dominican University of California. Here in Marin County, San Rafael, coming to you live as we do every Wednesday. And if you've are catching us a little bit late, we've gone over some March Madness talk. We just finished up the segment on the NBA, kind of talking crap about LeBron. That's always fun. Talking about the Warriors a little bit. We talked about the NFL meetings going on in Boca Raton. And so if you missed any of the show so far and you want to listen to it again, or if you just can't get enough of me, you can log on to radio.dominican.edu, go to student shows, and every single one of our shows, myself and everybody else's shows here at Penguin Radio, will be archived for you to listen to. And that is true also for athletic events. So if you want to revisit Dominican's upset win over Azusa Pacific in basketball, let's say, or listen to myself and Lizette Cabrera doing a softball game, and that is all available for you as well. Softball team, we'll be hearing from them here on Penguin Radio for a little bit. They're at Academy of Art this weekend, and then weekend after that, they're headed for a little tournament down in SoCal. So next time we'll be seeing them is on the 9th of April against Notre Dame. So make sure to tune in to that one. I will be on the call along with Lizette Cabrera. So it's a head into our final segment of the night. We're going to do our brew of the week and our bet of the week. So kind of a, I know I say triple B a lot on this show, but that's kind of a double B going there. And let's go ahead and start with our brewery/bar of the week. And for this week, I decided to take a little bit of a different angle. We've done mainly, well, not just mainly, we've done all breweries so far, brew pubs. You know, we've done the Bear Republic and Russian River Brewing Company and Drake's out in San Leandro. They're kind of in the middle. It's kind of a little bit of a stretch to call them a brew pub, you know, because they don't really have a, at least at the brewery itself, they don't have a, you know, quote-unquote sit-down restaurant, but they do have food, and the food there is good. So, this week we're going to go a little bit different. We're going to go to kind of my favorite watering hole, a place that pours a lot of beers on draft. They have great food, and the good news is you know, it's pretty popular, but I'm surprised. You know, I'm talking to students around campus. A lot of kids don't know a lot about this place, and I have the pleasure of living pretty close by to this place, so I've been there, you know, a number of times, and we're talking about right here in San Rafael, right off of A Street in San Rafael in downtown. It's the Flatiron Saloon. That's the place we're looking at this week. Flatiron is a really great place to go, and, you know, it's got a really kind of old classic, you know, sports bar feel to it. I'm not sure where they got the floors, but they found some old floor from an old basketball gym somewhere, and their floors look like basketball gym, which I think is awesome. And they have a ton of great brews on draft, and, you know, and they have all ones that you're familiar with. So the, you know, the Lagunitas IPA, let's say, or Mount Tam Pale Ale from Marin Brewing, or the Kilt Lifter from Moylan's. They have all, or Racer 5 IPA from Bear Republic, all beers that I've talked about on this show and, you know, that are featured regularly on bar menus. But they also have kind of beer specials every week that they're always rotating in new beers from all around the West Coast. And, you know, not just the West Coast, from really all over the country. And that's always fun. You know, you can go in and try a new beer all the time. And that's cool. And, you know, just the other day I tried a new beer called the Angel City IPA from, as you could imagine, the Angel City, LA, City of Angels. But, you know, and that was a great one. And that's not it. You know, they're a great bar. You know, if you're not all into beer, they have a great list of specialty cocktails as well. They got guys that know what they're doing behind the bar. They make good drinks. They're not too strong. They're not too sweet. You know, they're well-balanced, and they use quality ingredients. You know, John Taffer would be very happy if you're following Bar Rescue. That's a show that hasn't come up too much on our show, but I highly recommend it. But it's a great place, and the thing I think that really sets it apart as well is their food. Their food is very kind of, you know, pub grub oriented. You know, they got the big burgers. Their chili is legit. Their chili is absolutely incredible. It is top-notch chili. So if you're a chili fan, I would absolutely, you know, drop everything you're doing and go get a bowl right now. But you know, and, you know, great burgers. I mentioned Chili, hot dogs. They have great hot, happy hour snacks that are relative, you know, like quesadillas and pulled pork sliders, you know, that type of stuff. You know, it's all same deal, quality ingredients and, you know, homemade. That's another big thing, a big push that they have there, you know, and it's all, you know, it's relatively good price. They have a great happy hour. I'd be hard pressed to name a better happy hour in San Rafael, and especially in terms of it being reasonably priced. But, you know, just a great place. And the thing that really I think sets it apart as well is the service. Their service is phenomenal, especially for a sports bar. Sometimes service is kind of put on the back burner, but not here. They really do a great job of taking care of everybody in terms of the service that they can provide. So we're just about out of time here on Penguin Radio. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. But before we go, of course, got to have our bet pick of the week. And with it being March Madness and all the craziness going on with that, I have to stick with March Madness, don't I? And if there's a week where my streak may end, this could be the one. But this week, I'm going to go with the Maryland Terrapins. That's right, crab cakes and basketball this week. That's what Maryland does. Over Kansas in the spread. Kansas has the biggest spread, and here's why. Kansas has the biggest spread of any team favored by 6.5 points at the moment. And I think these two teams are very close in terms of overall talent. And I expect a good game from these two teams. And I think it's going to take a really good effort from Kansas for them to be able to beat Maryland by 7 points, basically. It's at 6.5. So that would be the reason why I would take Maryland. Not so much to win the game, like I'm not saying the money line where you're taking Maryland straight up. I'm saying play that spread in your favor. You know, make Kansas beat a very good team by 6 or more points. So those are my picks for the week. So we just had Flatiron Saloon as our brewery slash bar of the week. And take Maryland over Kansas in the NCAA tournament. So we are out of time here on Penguin Radio. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. I'm Jeff Safford. Until next week, have a good night, everybody. Where you can't get what you want, but you can get me.